Mr. Cockrum, Rail 8. We're talking about the time when you were aboard the Duff. We're talking really about the period following D-Day. What's the next thing you remember? Any other instance after the sinking of the human torpedo in July? Before the Duff was mined.
We just kept doing the normal things, patrolling. But this time we were going as we got a port. The one in Belgium, I think it was, the first port he got. We started moving further towards Holland, patrolling off the Hook of Holland. And that's where we were.
Is there anything else before that happens?
So what we'd do, we'd go off the Hook of Holland, the same procedure again, chasing e-boats. And as I say, it was... You knew that every night, you knew, at midnight you'd be in action. And you knew 4 o'clock in the morning, there'd be another round. And then towards six, that'll be your last engagement.
Now, where were you based at?
We were still based at Ryde. Ryde was still our base.
Now, did anything happen off Holland, the Hook of Holland, that you remember?
There was nothing outstanding. Just the normal skirmishes with e-boats. I don't recall ever getting involved, bringing any survivors on or anything, or any human torpedoes, you know.
So would the next thing be the mining of the Duff in November? I don't know.
Yeah.
What was the date?
Well, they reckon it was the 30th of November. What happened was... We'd been chasing e-boats all night off the Hook of Holland. And daybreak, and he sent us down again to the mess deck, all hands down, you know. And about 7:45 in the morning it happened. Normally, I'd leave the mess about 7:45 and get up on forecastle head again. But this particular morning, there was a leading signalman there, and one of the young ABs off my mess, a young ordinary seaman off my mess, he slept in a bunk in his mess, see, although he was a member of my mess, catered for, you know. And he said to me, "This lad is—he's not washing properly and all this." And so I said, "Look, I've got to go on watch. Let's sort it out later on with me." Anyway, he hummed and hawed, and one thing led to another, and it nearly cost us our lives, because while I was getting a bit heated back at him, there was a big explosion, and the ships just seemed to go up in the air, forward up, and all the lights went out, and everybody was thrown around. And
let me tell you, you were where?
On the mess deck itself, on the forward mess deck.
Forward port mess deck.
Yeah, yeah. And when everything settled down, and we tried to... get out. The big door that we used to open the handle would have been an American ship. To go up that companionway where we could all get out quick, that was jammed. That had taken a full blast. Because it actually hit the engine room, the blast, and it was just a baff that, you see.
So it's the bulkhead door was jammed?
So we couldn't open it. So the only way out was up the forward hatch. Now, that hatch was closed for watertight reasons, you see. And with us hitting the mine, you couldn't open that. You had to go up like a porthole. And to get up through that porthole, you had to climb up a ladder, overrun, like. But the slowed us up was we all had our life belts on, which was an order. at sea, as soon as you left the harbour, that's where your lifeboat's blown up on. So I was the senior laden seaman down there, but I had no authority to tell them to take their lifeboats off to get up, which would have been the quicker. The quickest way would have been to take your lifeboats off and get up. But we had seen destroyers and them sink quick off the beachhead, and this is why nobody wanted to take their life jackets off in case you went down. So we eventually got up. It took us all a while because the mess deck was full. And when we eventually got up, she was going around in circles. All the steering had gone. And somebody had saying the gun, A and B gun, instead of having them saying right ahead, they thought by putting the gun barrels pointing to starboard, they'd balance the ship off. But they weren't. This was... Anyway, eventually we went back aft and we used the emergency steering. It was right back aft. There was like a little thing sticking up out the deck. And all as we done, we just put this...
Now, did you do this, or do you mean the ship did?
At first the ship did, but then I took over and done it. And what we done, we steered it back to Harwich that way.
Now, how did it work? How did the emergency steering work? Can you just explain?
Yeah. What it was, you were stood up, and it was just like a big piece of wood, a bow tube or something. And it just went over this square head that was sticking up out the deck. And all as you'd done, you just moved it to steer the ship left or right, or, you know. And that's all you kept doing. And we with the engine room going, and actually we weren't at full steam. We were only on a short, must have been a one end boil or something, a one engine. But we staggered slowly back to Harwich.
What damage had been done as far as you could see? Or was it all beneath?
It was all beneath, plus the wheelhouse, the steering had gone, you see. But you couldn't see from the naked eye. It was all beneath. Now, later on, when I come off and let somebody else have a go at steering it, a stoker friend of mine, he said to me, "Hey, Scouse, let's put a lifeline on and go down in the boiler room and try and get the bodies up." And the chief stoker said, "No, you don't." He said, "They'll be full of steam and oil down there. You'd lose your lives," he said. "Stay where you are. Nobody's going down there. Nobody's going down there," he said. "Those people won't know what has hit them," he said. So that was left. So eventually, later on, it took us hours to get back to Parks and Quay.
There was no question of the ship sinking?
No. At first we thought it would, but there was no question. But she was...
You weren't taking water in particularly? Not too much?
No, no. She was... She wasn't as bad damaged as we thought at first. But then, when we got her into Parks and Quay, the next day the captain said, "She's more crippled than we think." And he said, "I'm going down to the dockyard now to get dockyard people to come and inspect her." Anyway, we stayed alongside Parks and Quay, and they'd done all the checks and tests on her. And they realised the only way to do was to pay us all off and just leave the gunner's mate and Chief Stoker and the engineer, Chief ARA, because we'd only lost one stoker, and petty officer, and two stokers. We'd only lost three people, see.
That's all we killed.
That's all that was killed. They were the ones down in the... So, that's what he decided to do. So, in the starboard mess, the forward, the one opposite our mess, I was on the forward port one. There was a three-bad JB there from Manchester. And he said to me, "Scouse," he said, "as you're the senior killick, will you go and make this suggestion to the captain?" He said, "I've had this happen to me before on a ship." He said, "For the three dead shipmates, that we all donate a day's pay to the families, see. So I got permission, went up to see the captain, and I told him it wasn't my idea, it was come from the mess deck. And could we all donate a day's pay, you see? I said, and me being a leading seaman and Stripey being a three badge, we'd be donating more than the young ordinary seaman. So he said, no, he said, the Navy's not allowed to do that. He said, but what we're doing, when you pay off, there'll be a big bucket there, and I'll throw what you can in. It's up to you, he said, we don't, you see. So, as it happened, we went, we got paid off. I got all my back pay as a leading seaman and everything. I'd never gotten it. So, the money was all our back pay, and we had quite a bit to pick up. So we all threw, instead of a day's pay, we all threw a lot more in, you know. So out of the crew, they done well.
The families
done well. Now,
so you were paid off at?
Paid off in Parkston Quay, Harwich, and we went down then to Devonport Barracks, the whole lot. POs came down with us and everything. There was two seamen POs came down with us. All the ABs, all the leading seamen, signalmen. And the funny thing about it, we hadn't spent no money, but this particular night in Parkston Quay, there's a pub just up, you know. And you know, once we settled down, we knew we were leaving the ship, we decided to go and have a drink. And this Ginger Pedder, he was a torpedo man. And he goes in this pub and he opens his belt to get a 3 points for the three of us. And he opens the condom with his money in, and everybody looks at him. It's the first time I'd been ashore, you see, since D-Day. And it's November. And he's getting his notes out of a condom to pay the fella at the bar.
Did you have a good night's drinking?
Yeah, it was just up from the ship, you see. And yeah, I couldn't help but laugh at that. Yeah.
Did you get drunk?
No, just had a, you know, merry life. Because you had to keep your wits about you going back to barracks.
Now, what happened when you got back to barracks? So that would still be November.
Yeah, we went back
it would be December, wouldn't it? 30th, so it would be December.
Yeah, we went back to barracks and
To Drake.
We got back in, I'd say maybe about the 13th of December or so. Now, on the way down, there was this Geordie two badge PO, and he was on about, we'd get second class survivors leave. I said, I've never heard of it. You know, because the ship never sunk. I said, I've never heard of it. I said, and I'm not going to be stupid enough to request for that when we get in barracks. I said, all as I'm going to ask for is joining barracks leave. I said, because it's in our pay books, we haven't had leave. You see, they used to stamp your leave and your warrants in your pay book, you see. I said, so I'm just going to go to the officer, the divisional office, put a request to the divisional officer, that I request to join in barracks leave. And that's all I'm going to do. So when we went in to barracks, we'd done the routine, joining depot and doctor, dentist and all that lot. Went up to the gunnery school again and he stamped your card and everything. And got a request form then from the division officer, and I wrote on it my name, leading Seaman Cochrane and everything. Request to see the commander through the division officer for joining barracks leave. And the next day I went before the division officer and he looked at it and he said, "What's happened?" I said, "Well, she's hit her mind, sir, and the ship's more badly damaged than we thought, and they decided to pay us off." And he said, "Well, you're entitled to 10 days' joining barracks leave." And he gave us 10 days' leave. So we all the ship's crew got 10 days' leave, you know. Through me being, instead of being stupid, putting second-class survivors leave and upsetting him, you know, I just joined in depot leave. And he looked at me pay book, he knew it had none. So all the ship's company got that joined depot. We all got 10 days' leave. You see?
How did you feel, I mean, in yourself? I mean, you'd nearly been... I know the ship didn't sink, but when it was hit, you were trapped, really.
Yeah.
Did that affect you at all?
I'll never forget it. Honest to God. We actually thought we were going, everybody. Everybody thought we'd had it. Yeah. The ship thought we'd had it. Yeah. Because we'd seen destroyers sink in matters of seconds and minutes.
And did that affect you afterwards, though? I mean, did it give you nightmares or bad dreams?
Yeah,
or?
What happened was, when I come home on leave, I got up shouting one night. I was shouting in my sleep, you know, "She's sinking, she's sinking." I lived in the top room of a... We only had gas in our house, but we'd never had no gas in the bedroom, see. We used to just take a torch up and put it out when you got in bed. But I actually woke the family up shouting that she's sinking. And I was like that for a couple of days. And the Anglican Theatre in Liverpool, it was just being finished, because my father had worked on it as a young man. And while I was home on leave, I went down to there to see it and you know, say a prayer, really, of thanks. Yeah.
So it did rattle you a bit?
It did rattle us.
Did it last long, the nightmares?
No, it didn't last long.
Did it make you more nervy afterwards when you were at sea? Or no? I mean, you know.
Later on, it didn't, because I'll tell you, there's a later story to come up about when I was on the Black Prince.
So you got over it. We'll come to that later.
Yeah.
So what, after you leave, what happened when you got back? I mean, how long were you in the barracks?
Got back into barracks. And only in barracks about a week or two.
Still in December? Or edge into January?
No, in January it was. And we got reports of the DFDO, that was the drafting office.
You told us what the procedure on arriving was. What was the procedure when you were drafted? You know, what happened when you were drafted?
You go up to the DFDO, the drafting office, and they say, "You're going to such a ship. Going past the doctor and dentist," say. So you're going past the doctor and dentist, go back, you were fit to go to sea then, you see.
So the same as when you arrived?
Yeah. So I passed the doctor and dentist, and I was all right.
Anything else about drafting? Or was it, that's it?
So he said to me, "You're going to HMS Golden Iron."
Golden Iron.
Yeah, and that's all he said. He never said where it was, who, you know. He said, "There's two labels. Go and put your name and your draft on it. One for your kit bag, one for your hammock, see? And bear the mustard and pace at such a time." So it goes back to the mess, picks me bag and hammock up and labels on and everything. Tells the killer of the mess that I was being transferred to HMS Golden Iron. And so then even my mail come to forward it, you see. And
but you didn't at the time know what HMS Golden Iron.
No,
was.
No.
Okay.
So there's the beauty of it now. We get on the train at Devonport Barracks. They have a station there, you see, in Barracks. We get on it. Now, normally, to go up to Liverpool and Manchester and Crewe and all that, the north of England, as they call it, you would get at North Road Station. See, that's where you used to go from Barracks to North Road Station on the bus and home on leave. Anyway, we get on this train at Barracks, the whole draft was quite a lot. And they all go to Golden Iron, no one knows. Anyway, all kinds of different ratings, you know, you name it, they're all there. Anyway, we froze on the train and we're going to stations we'd never seen before. Didn't know where, having a clue where we were going. And eventually, tea time, we arrives. Not in Lime Street or Edge Hill Station, Liverpool. In Gladstone Dock Station. Right. The north end of the city. Right away from where I lived. Oh. And we're going aboard this ship, HMS...
Empress of Scotland.
Empress of Scotland. Going aboard there. So, put our bags on and and when we get settled in on the ship, like, I start looking around for the ship's crew and the dockyard mateys, and that's them, because the dockyard mateys always know more than the crew. So the dockyard people said, she's sailing tomorrow. You're going tomorrow, so there's no chance of going home to see my mother and tell her the news, you know. I was just lumbered on there all night. And the next day we sailed, just come out the dock into the Mersey.
That being January still.
Yeah. And we sailed then. But when we actually sailed, there was all kinds of matlows from Devonport, Chatham and Pompey. There was also some RAF fellas aboard. And there was a lot of Marine commandos aboard. They were going out. But they weren't going to the Golden Iron, the Marines. They were going to another deep place, you know. I don't know where the RAF were going. They were going out, like. Anyway, we had no destroyer escort because she was fast enough, you see. But the next day as we're going out, this touring officer comes up to me and he said, Lady Sibyl Cockrum, you will be captain of the 6-inch gun back aft. She had a 6-inch gun, that was a main armament back off for firing at submarines. And she had hurricanes on the wing of the bridge for aircraft. Well, all the way across, I was on the 4-on and 8-off on the 6-inch gun. But we never seen any action or nothing, you know. Went through the Panama we did, which was a wonderful sight. And
what was it like on board there?
The food was terrible for a liner. And every meal he had, there was always the... I didn't know who he was at first. We found out he was the second-class waiter, as they call him, or something, in the Merchant Navy. But the food was terrible for a liner.
What was wrong with it?
You didn't get enough. And it wasn't good or nothing. You know, compared with the Duff and the Renown and that, it wasn't a patch on it.
What was the rest of the conditions? What were the mess decks like? Was it crowded? Or
it was very, very crowded, yeah. Mostly put your hammocks on the deck and slept on the deck, you know, spread your hammock out. And of a day, you could get a big mug of tea for threepence, the old three pennies. And there used to be a big queue for this cup of tea in the mid-morning, you know. And after a while, these merchant navy fellas, they had a racket going. When the lads would go up and hand sixpence in it, we have no change. So instead of paying a cup of tea, you were getting paying sixpence. And a lot of the lads started using a rag over it, you know. But they did, they ripped us off. And
anything you remember about the voyage?
Yeah.
By Panama, you say?
Yeah, going through the Panama. We went through a freshwater lake, you know. And he told us, if you want to drink, now is the time to drink. This is freshwater lake. And he said, if you want to wash now, now is the time to use fresh water. You know, it's all fresh water. So we actually went through this freshwater lake. And they chopped all the water down the ship up with it, you know. Yeah, it was a wonderful sight going through. All the tugboats there, you know, they're all painted, not black like ours or white, all fancy colours, all bright colours. Oh, it was a lovely sight going through. Portobello and all them places, I'll never forget it. It was wonderful.
You didn't get ashore, though?
No. And when we'd gone through the Panama and we're on our way to Sydney...
That's where the Golden Arm was.
Yeah. Well...
Golden Eye, sorry.
Well, what happened was, a couple of nights out, they said to us, right, during the night you will come past the international date line. He said, you will go to bed on Tuesday night, and when you wake up it'll be Thursday morning. And that's what happened. We actually went, during the night, went through the international date line, and went to bed at Tuesday, woke up Thursday morning. Lost the day, you see. Yeah. Fantastic there.
Anything else? Just sailing across?
We went sailing across the Pacific then to Sydney. And it was funny when we got in Sydney. You can imagine loads of Marines on, RAF and seamen. And they all want to see the same. And he had to come over the Round Ale. The ship was like that going to Sydney Harbour, listening to starboard, because everybody was on the starboard side to see the shoreline, you know. So he had to say, go back to the port side to trim the ship off, you know. Yeah, it was funny. And we went in, eventually went into the dock, like, and tied up and everything. And it was amazing. Golan Eye was a long way outside of Sydney. It was actually Warwick Farm. It was called the racetrack. It was actually called Warwick Farm Racetrack. We were on a racetrack. And what it was, they'd put all marquees up, and I think it was six of us slept in a marquee. And the big giant and all they had, oh, the food there was fantastic, the Aussies. Although it was our navy, like, it wasn't Australian, it was our, the Kooks and everything was ours. And we used to go to this...
It was comfortable, then.
Oh, it was comfortable, the food was good. The first evening meal we got was fantastic. And we all got half a grapefruit each for... Half a pineapple each for our sweet after our evening meal. It was lovely, it was. Yeah. And it was funny waking up there of a morning and getting your wash and shave, going to the bathroom, like, across to a big... The water come, like, from taps down like a trough, and you get your wash and shave. And during the course of the day, you'd sit early morning, you'd see racehorses running round the outside of the track, you know, doing the gallops, and there'd be proper jockeys on them. And it's amazing how many loose dogs there was there, running round. And the horse would rear up, you know. If a dog got in front of it, the horse would rear up on its two hind legs, you know.